welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, we have another great show dealing with living in the coming fourth ray and how that affects beauty versus conflict, especially for those living in the most dense dimension of time and space, where all, I think, of our listeners are presently listening from. Although I don't know if they get us in other dimensions, but I don't think so at this time. One would have to visit there on a pretty regular basis to know all of the technological changes, but I, as far as I know, they don't hear me there. Now, what does all this mean? Living in the coming fourth ray, to begin with. First of all, I think it's important to recognize that we haven't had the fourth ray focused in this world, which I'm meaning Earth, since 1675 or so, the AD. Now, what does that mean? It hasn't been focused. It means that in order to accentuate the development of life, four out of seven rays at the present time are focused on by beings, yes, who exist in other, we'll call it worlds, but really, for the most part, they exist in other star systems and constellations far away from us, and they have such great consciousness that they can affect all three of the lower dimensions at a minimum that human beings live in, and that almost all of life as we know it, although there's other kinds of life, on here on Earth exists. And this is kind of in accord with some of the principles of evolution. That's not to say that it's evolution without God. It's actually evolution with God, because these beings work on the side of light. They try to bring in a spiritual world by producing more development in certain parts of life faster and in a hopefully more balanced way than if there was no focus on these particular rays, which the rays correspond to a chakra in a sense. We have seven senses, humans do. But animals have only five or less, and plants generally have even less than that. So what we're talking about here is the development of human life and lower being stimulated by an increase in intensity of the development of sense. Now, when you increase the development of sense in a life form, it gets more information. If it uses that information in an enlightened way, which will be called spiritual, and does so consistently, the sense develops better and more accurate information, which then is converted by the life form, depending upon its development, into a certain level of knowledge. Now, very low life forms produce almost no knowledge in themselves. They produce some knowledge, small amounts, in their group souls. And higher life forms produce some knowledge within themselves and a lot more knowledge within the group souls, because the group soul is collecting all the information from millions, possibly, of different individual life forms of its type of species and family, etc. Now, the interesting thing about this is that a way that this whole system works, like I said, it's related to evolution, and therefore the concepts of evolution apply, that survival of the fittest, that those with the ability to mitigate forces upon themselves will probably live longer, and those that are able to adapt faster and better certainly will live longer. All these are a part of the general principles of evolution. The difference is the spiritual part. And I'm not saying, by the way, that Darwin wasn't aware of this. I think he was. It's just the people who have interpreted Darwin since Darwin have a different viewpoint on this. And that is that if it's not spiritual, the principle as it develops in the life form becomes imbalanced. And as it becomes imbalanced, it produces more and more conflict in the surrounding parts or environment of the life form. And eventually, it even becomes fatal for the life form. Even though the life form may be the strongest and most, we'll say, powerful in a survival sense in an immediate capacity, its lack of balance with its environment eventually leads to its own fatality. Let me give you an example about that, because this is so hard. It's really, some of it is a little counterintuitive unless you are really with the idea of spiritual. So for those who are listening who aren't, who may say, well, I don't believe in God, but I'm going to listen to this guy tonight anyway because there's nothing better on TV. Okay, great. Here we go. If, let's say, you're a super predator, okay? You could be a T-Rex. There aren't any T-Rexes that I'm aware of presently roaming Earth, but let's say you are a T-Rex. That means you're at the top of the food chain. That means you're a big, big beast with huge muscle masses, and you got to eat a lot to keep yourself going and all kinds of other stuff. Well, that's pretty good, because there's lots of things to eat out there, it seems, and as long as you are the king of the whole food chain, anything is open for your biting, and you can bite into anything and chew it, and good food, you know? Now, you may not want any plants in your diet, but maybe T-Rexes even occasionally became a little veggie, but there's no proof to this. I'm just speculating. But the point is that in either case, whether they enjoyed other foods outside of meat, the issue is for millions of years you have the upper hand and everything is wonderful, copacetic for you. Now, for the animals in your vicinity, particularly if they're mammals, they can't get much bigger than about 20 or 30 pounds, because if they do, you'll bite them and eat them. And if they're that much smaller than that, they can run away faster, they're more nimble, and also they're almost not worth chasing because it takes more energy to catch them than you get out of eating them. So you inherently don't go after those little guys. But it also means that mammals can't grow to the size where their brains get super big, and they also have to stay in environments that kind of force them off of where you are, which is mostly on the ground. So they hang out in trees or below ground, for the most part, especially when you're around. And that's cool. Now, why did I say that eventually may lead to an imbalance? Well, because as a creature, you're not particularly spiritual. T-Rexes aren't going around saying, gee, I'd really like the mammals to be able to coexist with me. It'd be kind of fun. Wouldn't it be great if we can have a more balanced world with beauty in it? I don't know too many T-Rexes that were probably into that, although I don't know any T-Rexes personally, but I'm kind of projecting myself into being a T-Rex at this moment. So here's the deal. Everything seems right for the T-Rex, right? Except one day a big rock comes and hits Earth at a huge speed, possibly, let's say, 75,000 to 100,000 kilometers per hour. I mean, it's coming in really fast. And wacko, it hits, you know, down at the southern tip of Mexico, and wacko, woomo, in part of the ocean. And the next thing you know, whoa, things aren't so great for T-Rexes anymore. Why not? Well, you see, the animals who are living below ground actually have an advantage now, and they don't eat much. They don't need much. They can live on roots of plants that died 30 years ago if they can find them. And the thing is that everything above ground is dying or dead because of a warm, protracted, we'll call it nuclear-type winter that lasts for maybe 10 years or something. And the T-Rexes are long dead, you see. So ultimately, over time, a lack of being spiritual puts you out of balance with all the elements of nature. Some of those elements are just big rocks coming and hitting Earth. Other elements may be the sea level rising, or it could be a sudden change towards an Arctic environment because of the tilt of the Earth slightly changing. It could be a lot of things, but those things over time means that you become less adaptable. And the adaptation principle runs in the face of survival of the fittest if you only include the strongest, most powerful survivor. So you get into, and Darwin understood this principle. I do, in reading some of what Darwin wrote, that's clearly in his concept. It's just ignored. So when we look at this, if you can avoid all of the conflictive elements of force in the environment by being, first of all, more intelligent, and beyond intelligence, spiritual, which means that you're enlightened, you have consciousness similar to God, then no matter what happens, you will survive, and you will even prosper in the environment that you're in, because you're constantly creating a non-conflictive environment for yourself and all the other life around you. And when you do that, that produces something called beauty. Now, beauty comes from not only enlightening your own senses, but it also comes amazingly from enlightening the senses of all other life around you while you're enlightening your own senses. And so the life becomes balanced with your life, and you live in a non-conflictive environment. Well, this is pretty cool. You know, I mean, really, when you think about it, that is a kind of, we'll call it, idealized state of existence. And in some respects, this is what motivates many human beings to seek out some improvement in themselves and in others. Unfortunately, it is not the motivating force in all human beings, because some human beings think they can enlighten just themselves. That doesn't work because they're not group conscious, they're not soul conscious. Okay, so they think they know better for everybody else. They're going to force everybody else to be what they think they should be. And that's going to be their picture of what to them is perfection. And it is, of course, egotism and a demand for control, and always leads to conflict. Or sometimes some humans don't really care. They're more arrogant rather than just egotistical. And they don't care what anybody else thinks or feels, because as long as things are great for them, that's all that matters. Well, of course, they're the T-Rex and blinders, huh? And eventually a big rock or something bad is going to happen to them. Okay, so as we examine the fourth ray, is the ray that really brings all of everything I just said to the forefront of human life. And it does so by causing humans to experience conflict at a greater level. Not that it doesn't increase conflict, it actually just makes it more obvious to humans that there is conflict, and they suffer from being aware of the conflict at a greater level. It isn't that the conflict itself may be greater, although sometimes it is. It's just that they are more aware of it. Okay. It's sort of like, gee, give me some Novocaine and I won't know the pain. But if you take the fourth ray in what it does to us, it increases a thing called the center that is at the base of spine. Now, for a lot of people, that's going to be confusing, but that's what it does. It's a center that's very reflective. It allows us to have an inner sense of what conflict versus beauty is, and what it means to be, in a sense, a spiritual person. And it does so without using the spiritual sense, which is strange. The spiritual senses come from the heart chakra and the crown chakra. Humans have them. and animals do not. They may have a heart and crown chakra, but they are missing consciousness associated with those chakras. And we aren't. We've got them. We've got it. With the basis spine, even an animal can sense beauty to some extent. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah, the animals can. And believe it or not, I'm going to tell you this, but you probably won't believe me, plants can too. If you understand the concept of plant devas and what they do and how they express themselves, that makes sense to those who understand that. The rest of you are going, huh? Yeah, that's okay. Don't worry about it. It's one of those esoteric things. It really doesn't matter in this context tonight, but it is an interesting thought that even plants, if put into an ugly environment, do worse. Really. Yeah, you don't believe it, try it yourself. Plant some plants in a very ugly place with all kinds of garbage and trash around, and plant some in a relatively, by your standards, beautiful place, and see which ones do better. I mean, everything else being equal now. I don't want you to fudge on the experiment. And I think that will surprise some people. Okay. Now, getting back to what I'm trying to deal with this evening. And again, this subject, we're going to really get into many different aspects of what this is about, because this is where we're going to be focused for the rest of this century. So let us look at this from hopefully an enlightened viewpoint, so that we can gain something from the rest of the century instead of sort of looking around and saying, well, how come that's happening? Okay, this concept in this whole program tonight is in an extreme measure taking place here in the physical dimension. It does take place in the astral and to a lesser extent in the monastic, but not like it does in the physical. Now, why is that? Because in the physical, the conflict is always caused by forces, and forces are exaggerated to the maximum level while we're physically alive. That's one. These forces are intolerable at times, particularly on a planet like Earth, where this beauty versus conflict is continuously a challenge, because we're not a spiritual planet yet, if we're ever going to be. And that's called sacred. We're not a sacred planet, and we don't have this balance yet established in the physical world. It's somewhat established in some parts of the mental world, but that doesn't mean anything really, because it's the physical world where the fight really is about. It's the survival of the planet will be determined by what takes place here in the physical world. Now, if you're looking at this from the side of darkness, darkness is wanting to increase the conflict and decrease beauty. Beauty leads to enlightenment and forces darkness off of a planet. So it wants to increase the conflict in the world so that it can survive and prosper by becoming more powerful. And then using power use force and forces to be destructive to those that are not evil. And so it enhances evil, obviously. You do that. I mean, it's a pretty obvious concept. And so that's where the dark side is doing its thing. Now, for the rest of us, if we can beautify our environment in the world, we then have a much greater likelihood and chance of succeeding. Now, you could say, well, I'm into feng shui and my house is kind of nice and all that stuff. Well, yeah, that's okay on an individual level, but remember that beauty has to come from improving the senses of others. And unless you have a lot of folks going through your house every day, and some of them have to be pretty, we'll say, not too aware, to help them, you know, unless you've got that going on, it's probably not going to do much in terms of improving the beauty concept. Just by improving your own sense to some extent by being in a nice environment when you live in the house is not going to overall create beauty in your world, especially with those that need it the most, who you may challenge them not to come in your house. So it is a problem. And for spiritual people who want to discipline themselves, their job is to, and I want you to listen to this carefully, create environments that affect more than just themselves. It could be to the standard of what their consciousness can control in a sense of development so that others can experience beauty from that environment. Now, beauty has to do with function as well. It is not just a question of, like, oh, it's a pretty place. That's part of it. I don't want to kid you. But it's also that it functions in numerous ways to provide life, the growth of life, in all kinds of parts of the kingdoms of life. So you want the plant life to be improved. You want animal life to be improved. You want human life to be improved. And, I mean, if you really go beyond that, you want superhuman life, if you can, be improved as well. So you have all of this coming into play if you're going to be doing the kinds of things I'm talking about. Now, that's a huge thing for humans to attempt to achieve, but some do, and some may be a cog in making it happen. In any case, it is important, even if you're a cog, so to speak, but because it's one of the few ways that we can directly see the results of our actions on a daily basis. Most of the things that people do that are spiritual are hard to see on any kind of basis outside of years to decades, whereas beauty has immediate effects that really can be seen, sometimes in hours. So this is where life can take on a completely different meaning if you're physically alive, because things go so slow here, yet beauty is one of those things that can circumvent it. And instead of, oh, well, I'm going to live a spiritual life, and 10 years from now I'll notice it, this is where you can really get the feedback. The joy can come in a short order. And it's one of the advantages of having beauty overcome conflict by your physical mind. Now, you can say, okay, can you explain that concept a little further? I want to know why. Okay, I can. Because when you create beauty, the effects are so widespread that you almost can't even enumerate the totality. Let me give you an example. I, with a group of others, I have some design for a thing called permaculture, you know, stuff. What is that? It's like making a rainforest in a certain location that increases the functionality of a whole bunch of different plants, and also growing those plants in various ways, in special ways, scientifically, we have, that makes them grow better, and at the same time controls bad insects. Bad insects are bad insects that kill plants that are not, that humans would like to have to see alive. That is enormously, in a visual sense, beautiful, in a smell sense, beautiful, and that produces various foods and ingredients and necessary and sometimes important oils and things, and wood and other things that will add to amazing realms of both human civilization and the habitats of so many animals and life forms. It's incredible. And it will improve the sense of everything and everyone, person included, that lives within this environment. The environment could be 1,000 acres, like you can. And it has a healing effect on both people and plants. And part of this plan is even to have like a healing center for certain things. And so it's an amazing project. Now, you think about this, and the number of insects that will be affected, which means group souls of those insects, is beyond our comprehension. It's trillions, maybe, or millions, for sure. huge numbers over time. And then also birds, and there's even happens in this environment, there's certain larger monkeys, and there's some other ground animals, and all kinds of things that will be, brought into greater harmony. Now you could say, well, is harmony the same as beauty? It's the beginning of beauty. Harmony produces the adaptability issue that I was talking about, where things are harmonious. But the thing is that the beauty comes from the overall sense improving in the souls of the group souls, some of the souls of the more advanced plants and animals, and eventually, the conflict recedes. The conflict includes diseases, both for humans, but also for the plants and even some mineral aspects. Literally, the soil itself is preserved. Incredible things because of erosion factors. In fact, the whole chemistry of this environment improves tremendously. So you have this incredible new kind of, we'll say, existence affecting now all kinds of life forms. And in terms of human beings, if you live the right kind of existence within this environment, you could affect hundreds and even thousands of people who will be surrounding it and somewhat working within it and other things that eventually changes maybe a whole country and beyond that. So you have some things that can truly be, we'll say, done, but it's can be seen, some of the effects can be seen in short order. I mean, one day may be possible to see some actual changes from this effect. And you ask yourself, wow, how come I'm not doing that? Well, I don't know why you're not doing it. But it does require enormous creativity. Because in order to achieve beauty in the physical world as it is right now on Earth, it requires two things. Huge amounts of creation and huge amounts of consciousness balanced to the creation. That's the first and second rays coming together, becoming balanced in order to produce this, which then reduces conflict. As you reduce conflict, forces go down. And, of course, there's harmony among all of the different life forms, the balance, but at the same time, beauty is being increased in their senses. Whoa. Making the senses far more aware of all the things that live there. And there could be so much life there. Again, to list it all out, I'm giving you very, very short-term, shorthand ideas about this type of environment. And so it's so amazing that we can actually do this here in the physical world. Now, it generally requires more than one person because you can see the size of the creation to create beauty these days is beyond what most people can create themselves. Now, normally only a bunch of people working together. Now, you could call it a spiritual group. I don't care what you call it. It's people working together to produce the beauty. And that's, I call it a spiritual group, but you can call it something else. You can say, oh, well, that's a bumpack. I don't care what you want to call it. As long as they're doing it, they're doing it, right? And for those who attempt this in a very individual level, the outcomes are meager in comparison to those who do it on a soul and group conscious level, where you're working together with others for the common goal. The more you're aware of the reality of what you're doing, the greater the positive results. If you do so and you're unaware of the reasons you're doing it, you will not get as good results. Let's say instead of this project I'm telling you about being done by some people who are on the board of some scientific thing, but they don't know nothing about, ooh, God, nothing, forget it. They just want to do it because it's an interesting experiment or because maybe they're on the board of some commercial establishment, they want to make a lot of money or whatever the story may be. The limitation of the mundane expectations causes a lack of substantive development of awareness in both themselves and those that experience their creation in terms of God. So it isn't that they won't improve to some extent, small amount, some level of beauty and a reduction in conflict, but it will be de minimis in comparison to if their goal is to do that right from the beginning, and they design everything to try to produce this. This is the challenge of today. Now, the people who are living at the present time, who are more spiritually developed, because they've had usually more lifetimes in the world and more successful ones as a soul, then those folks, and they're not that common, they're not that numerous, have the best shot at living in the coming fourth ray. Now, although they have a better shot, that doesn't mean others can't do something that will be helpful. However, those who have, we'll say, the most conscious element in their creation, over the balance, creation and consciousness, the two rays come together, produces light, produces God's thought, that is the ticket. And so those who are listening to tonight's show, as an example, might be better candidates for this than those who are not. But and there's probably many people who aren't listening to tonight's show who are great candidates for it, but they've never even heard of tonight's show, so they wouldn't know. But I'm saying this only from the standpoint that this needs to be much more on a fully conscious level than the subconscious one that most people live their lives by. Okay, and there's another element to the first part of creation, and that is sacrifice. If you're going to do the level of creation I'm speaking of, you will be sacrificing some level of individual, we'll call it selfish gain. Some parts of it will have to go. Now, what are those? It's individual. I can't tell you for sure. But it's something that stands in the way, that is darkness in your own senses, that you will have to discard, but will also limit the benefits to you on a singular or selfish level. That doesn't mean you will develop less of yourself individually, quite the opposite. As an individual, you can enlighten your own senses to any level. I'm just saying that you will not enlighten yourself as far as your senses are concerned. You may increase your knowledge to some level, and you may increase some levels of sense in a disharmonious or unbalanced way, which for a short time may make you the king of the kingdom, like the T-Rex. You will be able to be at the top of the food chain, but eventually some level of, we'll say, change around you will cause a fall from grace, to say the least, and you may find yourself, and probably likely will find yourself, in a compromised and seriously decreased position from where you could be if you were just living a more spiritual life and a more conscious one. So for the people who say, yeah, well, I want all everything you're talking about, but I also want to be super rich and do anything I want with all my money, you know, I don't know, it's all about me, you know, and I want everybody to know I'm smarter than everybody else. I want everybody to know I'm controlling them and I'm going to do what I want. If that's what you want, the results will be a big rock may come in your way. Now, it may not, I'm saying that completely metaphorically, but something is going to happen. It may be a disease that you suddenly find yourself with, or it may be something close to you but uncontrollable that you find yourself lamenting and in serious regrets about. Whatever it's going to be a highly conflictive situation in which all the harmony will be gone, and you will find yourself in an ugly space. All right. Beware, because no matter what your position is at the moment, these things have a way of striking you obliquely when you least expect them. All right, so as we look at this whole process, it's fascinating from the standpoint that the world is moving in general in this direction, and for those of us who are ready to commit ourselves to this kind of experience, this is a good place to start. Now, What about evil? Does evil want to stop us? Oh, sure. There's no question evil does. You've got to be aware of evil, and you've got to do something proactively to stop it, or it will always prevail. In the world as it is at present, you need to understand evil is more powerful than good is. It's just that being aware enough allows us to then use our consciousness to do the things proactively that need to be done. Usually it's years ahead of time so that evil can't come and pounce on you. If you don't do those things, you're going to become nothing more than a victim, kicked to death, most likely, by severe conflict. Unfortunately, that's the way of the world, and that's what you pay for when you don't, we'll say, increase your consciousness to be able to see evil and do something about it early enough. And early enough means that you need to be creating such good in certain ways that you counter it long before it has the opportunity to come back on you. Amazingly, most people that are struck down by evil had years of time to do something about it. Oftentimes, they're even warned about it, and they don't do something about it. Be aware that as the world progresses now, if you're looking at the Middle East or what's happening here in the United States or any place else where it appears darkness is rolling in and evil is about you, those things are happening because of things that took place years ago that weren't taken care of. So just be aware of that in all conflictive situations from this point forward, certainly, and you can see them in the past, which may help you in the future if you reflect on them. Part of the process of the fourth rank is to reflect a great deal on the past so that you can understand what likely is going to be in the future. Remember that, because many people don't do very much reflection. They don't even think of the past, and that's always a danger. You've heard the story or the phrase that those who do not learn and understand history are doomed to repeat it. Well, that certainly is true in today's world. No kidding. Most of the things that are happening that are bad right now have happened many times, and in some cases, in our own lifetimes. In other cases, certainly in our parents' and grandparents' lifetimes. So it isn't that long ago. And yet we're just like, oh, gee, I didn't know what was going on. Yeah. Yet we're not still not reading those history books or looking at what has happened. So let's try and change that. And each of us has the ability to do that. Okay. So this fourth ray thing is a big deal. It's starting right now as I speak to you. This is it. The fourth ray is starting to switch with the third. The third ray is causing crystallization in those people who have not learned to be more virtuous in the use of their throat chakra in that sense. And it's causing a lot of those people to be heading for the end, destruction. How long does it take? Oh, about 4 to 7 years from this point, you can expect those folks to be biting the bullet along with everything that they created. Now, fortunately, some of those folks right now have created the economy in the world, and so the economy in the world might be destroyed, and some other issues like that. Also, wars. Look out, watch out for wars, big wars. Things that, I mean, nobody is unaware of in a mundane sense, but who we are missing the, clarity to see what could be done and what we can do or could have done even in very recent times to maybe make a change about it. So these are all the issues that need to be examined. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this, and then we'll get into some practical issues. Again, this will be an extended show. I think we're going in a half hours tonight, depending upon what time zone you're in, you figure about 2 hours and, well, let's see, we're going to be a couple, almost 2 hours from now, but we're going to be a little less now. But at any rate, we're going to be going longer because we have the time. The station's giving us the time to do that. And so it's a fantastic thing because I can spend the time trying to help everybody to understand this whole thing better. We will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about living in the coming fourth ray and how that affects beauty versus conflict. Now, some people have called this in the past harmony versus conflict, but it really isn't that. That's really only a piece of the whole puzzle. And tonight we're really talking about what the fourth ray coming in at this time means more than what the fourth ray itself is. So for some of you who study the concept of the fourth ray, this may be a slightly different way of examining it and probably more accurate, by the way, in terms of how things are happening in the world today. Okay, so let's talk about some elements. You know, for those of you who are following the news, you know that the elements of the fourth ray religion, which we call Islam, is actually pretty much out of balance at the present time in some places. And it's also, when we compare that to a more sixth-ray religion, which is Judaism, those two are in conflict together in the Middle East. And if we were to try to understand this conflict from the present ray structure, one way to see this is that those that are using their senses to support a spiritual outcome will inevitably be victorious. Now, what's a spiritual outcome? A spiritual outcome means that more beauty will be created, and the world will benefit through increased senses from all those who experience that which is being created. And on the other side, the world will experience darkness and will have a lack of balance, in a sense, and eventually the disharmony will destroy beauty and produce an evil outcome. So we have these things kind of like happening right now before us. That's using it as an example in terms of the news as of this hour almost. And so how can we change that particular situation? And unfortunately, here in the United States, we're making it worse. And depending upon what country you're looking at and how things are being developed and being used, I don't know too many places where it's being improved upon. Now, the Israelis are using force to attempt to counter the force that's being used on them. That is called war or military action. The answer is not entirely in that direction. The reason it won't resolve the situation is because the immediate effect of war is to destroy the senses by destroying life, and usually uglifying, if you've ever seen a war zone, you know what I'm saying, the environment that you are enacting the force against. And this is one of the problems that I see that is wrong with the concept that the world is presently engrossed in, we'll call it. Now, in their present circumstances, because the environment around them has been stupidly produced, mostly by the United States in the administration's last 4 years, but not helped much by the prior administration either, in resolving the conflicts that exist between the two religious stances and the countries surrounding Israel, we are at this, we'll call it, fountainhead of evil that is before us. The solution is the following. Unfortunately, there's going to be, in my opinion, war. And there's going to be a great deal more ugliness produced. Many lives will be lost. Mostly by people in the Gaza area, the Gaza Strip, and probably the people in Hamas. And I think the war will spread to Egypt. Now, when it spreads to Egypt, I think that may not be such a bad thing, because there was a tremendous mistake made by the United States in supporting, in both word and deed, this, we'll call it political but really military, group called the Muslim Brotherhood, who are really Hamas. I mean, they started Hamas, and they control Hamas. And Hamas is who's been sending missiles over to Egypt, over to Israel for years. So, in fact, we've created, and they're part also of the general terrorist movement. They are not necessarily hardcore terrorists as much as they are terrorists who support the more hardcore terrorists. But, you know, they aren't necessarily doing the same things that Al-Qaeda and other groups like them are doing, but they certainly, most of them are kind of sticking together. And it's pretty hard to tell one from the other if you had them in a room. Now, getting to the point I want to get to, the answer to this situation, if we could go back 4 years ago or six, is for the United States to have changed its attitude about how to resolve the conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. Now, I suggested this in a much earlier show. You'll almost have to go to KXAM programs to hear some of my suggestions about this. One of the things I suggested was that we literally rebuild the Gaza Strip and educate Palestinians and help them to develop an economy that is self-sufficient. At that time, they were even in worse shape, but they're going back to that this year. I believe me, the war is going to destroy them. But and use secular forms of education, getting away from the Sharia system and, you know, the methods of indoctrination that was worsening the problem, and allow people to follow an educational system as well as a economic system, developing capitalism as part of their structure. That makes them more creative and self-sufficient, develops individuality while developing some level of group consciousness at the same time. So this was my suggestion, you know. Instead of giving millions of dollars or billions of dollars to some of these countries just to keep dictators in, let's build up the consciousness of the generations that now are coming to age, so to speak, as fighters in this system, when we could have been educating them 8 years ago or longer, and doing something much better in terms of changing the circumstances and ignoring, in some ways, the conflict between Israel and Palestine, or the Palestinians and the two sides of their, you know, the Gaza and the other side, where there wasn't as much, we'll say, destruction. But this would have allowed a more reasonable population be developed that was less likely, because their senses would be improved. There would have been some level of beauty they could see in their own world, and some degree of, we'll call it, neutrality in terms of Israel. Allowing it to become completely a theocracy, which is what it is, that is based upon the defilement of human rights and the destruction of Israel, is unconscionable for all the countries, not just the United States now, but the United States is the leading country. If we started to lead that way, others would have followed us in Europe and elsewhere, and it would say, oh, it's working, it's a solution. So in other words, I'm talking about a unilateral approach, not this business, well, let's all go to Camp David and sing Kumbaya together and hope that it's going to resolve itself. You have to assume it's not going to resolve itself. But at the same time, we had the ability to prevent a disaster like is about to unfold. And the same is true about Iran. We had many opportunities in this last 4 years. In 2009, we could have supported the Green rebels in Iran. We could have brought about some change in Iran itself, and we could have weakened Iran by the surrounding areas being lessened in their radicalness. Iran is surviving because of Sharia, and this is a whole misunderstanding. Our present government is like lost. They actually support radical Muslims one way or another. And so what we're leading into now is suppression, eventually destruction of a good deal of some of the Palestinians, a blockade, and eventually potentially a war with Egypt, and possibly Turkey turning against NATO. And then finally, before spring, an attack on Iran and its nuclear facilities. Now, you can ask yourself, well, what is all that going to do? Well, it's going to do a lot of destruction for sure, because some of these may involve nuclear weapons on top of it. And please have some potassium iodide pills and other things like that in case there's fallout from this. I mean, literally, nuclear fallout. But also be aware that things like food and oil are going to go sky high, and it's going to be more difficult to create beauty in the places that have created the problem. And one of those places is the United States. I'm trying to show that we had culpability here, especially the last 4, 8 or more years ago, and for two administrations at least, but certainly in the last 4 years, it's almost ridiculous what's happened. So, you know, you have to be aware that if you're living in a country, you have what is known as national karma. You could be the most virtuous person, but you're still going to suffer from the karma of the country you live in. And there's world karma, too. So the whole place is kind of going to kind of have a lot of conflict. How bad is the conflict going to be? I think it's going to be quite bad. Why? Well, because, again, those who can't learn from history are doomed to repeat it, and I think we're about to repeat some very bad mistakes. And so it's going to be pretty much a mess, and a lot of people may die. Even more people will be destroyed in a sense, and life itself is going to be more of a struggle. So if you're in if you're on the side of those who want to be more spiritual, living in a more spiritual way means now trying to create whatever beauty you can in whatever ways you can, but remember, you can do it better if you can do it with others. So you might be thinking about that. And in any case, the circumstances are such that, you know, you can't keep pushing your head in the sand. You got to be looking at, well, how is the big picture here, and what can we do to make it better, instead of trying to ignore evil around you and say, well, I don't know, there's nothing really going on, is there? No, there's some real bad things going on, and it behooves everybody to be aware of it and see what they can do on a creative side, usually in cooperation with others, to make a difference. Could this whole thing be stopped? Well, it could be. It would take an enormous change in the present political attitudes. And I don't think so with the present president we have or his administration in the United States. But unfortunately, that's the country that can make the most change. If you live in a country outside the U.S., your country might have a better chance, actually, than the U.S., depending upon where you're living. So maybe some folks listening to my voice may have a better shot at it now, really. And maybe you can consider some new things that we're talking about. Okay, so things could get real bad real fast. Remember, energy and fuel is going to be at a premium and difficult. Food will be. And certain other parts of what we'll call economic structure. We may have radical turns between inflation and depression, which would be like deinflation. So that people can't really stay in the economic system and keep winning, because eventually it's going to become almost totally unpredictable. Right now, there's ways to win, but at the cost of others. So the thing to be most concerned about is not just surviving for yourself, but helping others to, through improving their senses, be somewhat beautified, more harmonious, less in conflict, so that they can respond and do a sort of pay it forward for everybody else that they have contact with. This is about the best kind of advice I can give at times like the present that we are in. This is the beginning of a very bad future. I don't think it's in anywhere near how bad it could get and probably will get. So, and let's hope I'm wrong, okay, because believe me, I would prefer not being right. I've said for the last 6 months that this sort of thing is coming. I thought it was coming at the beginning, end of the spring, beginning of the summer. Then it turned out that it was delayed somewhat because of political reasons and other things that were manipulated. But I don't think it's derailed. It was more or less put aside and also hidden, and maybe forestalled only for a brief time, mostly because of the to see the election results more than any other reason on all sides. Okay. Now, how does all this turn out in terms of each person having a responsibility? Because, I mean, I'm talking about really big things. I don't know if most people can say, well, gee, anything I'm going to do is really going to affect on it. You'd be amazed. One in if you go to the Alice Bailey books, particularly the ones, let's say, authored by the Tibetan master, those particular books suggested that literally thousands of dollars and maybe a few thousand people could have prevented World War II. I'm not exaggerating this. I mean, I'm telling you as it is stated in those works. Now, is that true? Well, I happen to believe it, but you may not. If you read what was suggested and you try to put it in the context of the times, this is 1935 to 37, it may make some sense. You'd have to read the history books of that time to understand what was going on here in the United States and in other countries to see if those suggestions would have actually made a difference. But here's the point. If you buy into, and I do, but many people don't, the statements made in those works, then you realize, but boy, if you could stop something as big as World War II, we certainly could stop a war in the Middle East. Right? I mean, that's not even close to what happened in World War II. I mean, we talk about 100 million people plus dead, and, you know, and a whole bunch of other stuff terrible happened. I mean, so it really gives us a pause to think that there's something we could do. Okay, so from that particular, we'll say, perspective, it seems as though there are things right now that we could be doing, more that we could have done certainly a year ago. In almost every circumstance, in retrospect, there was a better alternative than the ones that were chosen. But in some circumstances, there are radically better alternatives than those that were chosen. We're into the radical realm now. So this is the scary part of life, you know, when the mistakes that have been made are so huge and so, we'll say, profound that they, by their very nature, seem virtually world-shaking, if not threatening of existence in terms of Earth. Now, some people say, oh, that's just a bunch of hyperbole. This guy is just exaggerating. Well, I don't think so. But I can understand why some people might think that way. So to not be an alarmist or to try to get people to get so, you know, upset with what I'm saying that they don't want to listen anymore, let's just say this, that no matter how bad it's going to get, we have an opportunity still to make it better. And we can make it a lot better, in my opinion, even today. But it does require those who can understand the teachings that I'm doing and many other people to do something to make a change, to make a difference. And if that's where you're at, hi, let me know. Contact me. I would like to know about you. I'll try to help you in your ways, too. Not just by teaching here on this show, but in many other ways. I'm available, and people I know that are of like mind are available. So remember that if you're listening in, because it's way more important to work together on this than to do this strictly individually, because you can't. You won't succeed in the overall goal. You might have some benefit. So I'm not telling you not to do it, period, but I don't think it will be what you would hope it to be. And I would like everybody's efforts to be at their maximum benefit to everyone else, if possible. That's why I'm suggesting this. Okay, so we're really saying that life is changing, and I hope you get that message. As the history of this recent history of the world, and particularly, we'll say Western civilization, I don't know what that exactly means, but has been, things are not going to be the same. What sort of things can we look for that are going to be in conflict? Well, economy will no longer tolerate those who are seeking something for nothing. I did a show, Something for Nothing, The Path to Darkness. You may have heard that one. That darkness is powerful now and is going to strike down those places where it is being abused. Unfortunately, that includes the United States now. So you can expect those economies to fail. You can expect huge, huge conflicts among people in the environments. And the people who seek the most in a material sense from the system of trying to get something for nothing will pay the greatest levels of suffering in the next decade or so. That's not, I'm not saying it to, like, well, gee, that'll fix it, you know, kind of thing. No, I'm just letting you understand that that's what the science of this thing, as far as best as I can understand it, suggests is going to happen. Not as a retribution, and I'm not saying it because I'm going to get you guys. You know, it has nothing to do with that. I don't want anybody to suffer through this. I'm trying to give alternatives here, not make threats. So that seems to me, in one way, the economy. Okay, what is that? Well, it's a third-rate big thing that is so crystallized now that that way has to break. What is that way? Those who believe that an economy of using a system of getting something for nothing is a lasting formulation of existence, and it can't exist. In other words, it's based, it's anti-God, and eventually it is self-destructive. It is used by evil to gain power over others. Evil knows that it eventually destroys those who get involved in it. They don't care about that. It's irrelevant to their goals. Their goals are to steal energy and create forces against people so that they bow to their will. That's what they want. They don't really care. Well, gee, people will be starving in the streets and there will be riots. And they could care less about that. That's cool. You know, it means it's going to be easier for them to get more inductees into the dark system. All right. What else is going to be some of the fallout from this whole mess of things? Well, the concepts of, we'll call it liberty and justice, have been altered to some extent. And now we have a thing called social justice, which is anti-liberty. And so what does that mean? It means to take from those who create and have, to give to those who are less creative or who are anti-creative, and take. Whoa, that's not a too good of a system because it is upside down. But that's what's happening. So we're having an unjust system or unjust system develop related to a thing called social justice, which is some people's word for redistribution of wealth, taking from those who have and giving it to those who have not and do not deserve to have, therefore, because they haven't created as much. This is not to prevent, quote-unquote, a social safety net. That should always be in place for people who have, we'll say, karmic but unforeseen by them disasters that can be mitigated by charity and by help by those who are spiritually serving. It's nothing wrong with that. But you should still not mitigate all of life by taking all people who are have-nots and giving them for the people who have created good things so that they will continue to be non-creative and continue to selfishly want to take even more. There's no end to that system because you keep making people more and more selfish. They will become more and more seeking to take more from others. And eventually you end up literally taxing everybody to all amounts and giving it in some fashion or another through governmental control to those who will vote for those who will do that to keep them in kind of a minimal existence, the one in which they can be lazy and not have to be very creative or work very hard. All right, so we have this problem, and that a problem, and many people refer to this as communism, but that's a whole other thing because it also communism involves force in a physical sense, and we're going to see some of that too. But the issue is that you cannot support that system for very long. About three generations or so, that's 60 years, and then the system comes unglued. But the point is that if you look at this, it started in the 1950s in Europe, soon after World War II. It came from communism entering into the social structure and into the political structure. Many people just called it extreme liberalism, but it wasn't. And eventually, through that process, in about 50, 60 years, which is right now, it's just falling apart. You know, can't be supported any longer. Now, there were brief respites in some locales from it, but, you know, and eventually Great Britain sort of changed and even left part of it for a while. But in the meantime, it has become part of the educational system. And the danger here is the constant, we'll call it, brainwashing of our young people. And the young are most affected by this when they have a poor family environment. Now, why is that? Well, this is an important thing to realize, that a good family environment promotes spiritual values. No matter what religion, and even no religion, is being promoted. If spiritual values are there in a family environment, young people create enlightened factors in the world around them. And they don't buy into trying to get something for nothing. They rather would be creative for the meaning that it produces in their life. And for the meaning that it produces in other people's lives, that's what they live for, instead of, really, you know, what kind of thing am I going to get? But in families in which the social values are lacking, materialism, and particularly gross materialism, substantially replaces, we'll say, spiritual social values. And when that takes place, those children, especially when they're going to a school system that supports the same thing, usually through progressive thought of a certain kind, the results are that those children become unusually materially selfish and learn to expect to get something for nothing in most of the areas in which they are educated. The education itself almost teaches them how to manipulate so that they can do that. Whoa. And you can say, well, how come that's true? And it's because they teach the wrong thing about Darwinian thought, even, which is that the survival is of the fittest and the strongest. And the fittest and strongest is those that outsmart the system and others. Ooh, that's kind of scary. So it has its really sickening side, which is very ugly. When you produce ugly children, they become unusually ugly adults. And they then, if they become, we'll say, manipulated to vote in a system that says, hey, I'll give you more, they'll vote and then eventually take over. And the results are pretty disastrous. Now, can we change all that? Yeah, sure. Education and the development of family that is both, in both cases, enlightened, is the way to kind of turn it around. For those who have children today, it is extremely incumbent that you bring to your child's reality a sense of both balance and harmony and then beauty into their life. And this be on a daily basis. And if your school that they're going to isn't doing this, find a different school. And if they can't find a different school, homeschool. And if you can't homeschool because of the region you live in, move to a place where you're free to do that. Because the next generation controls what's going to be the next 20 years of life in this world. And we're a leading country, so if you live in the United States, that also has a peculiar importance. That's where the national karma comes to play. Now, if you're a youngster and you happen to be listening to the show, well, don't be shy. If things aren't going that way in your family, bring it up. There's no reason not to. And I don't know how many young people listen in, and especially that might be so bold as to say, hey, you got to listen to this guy on the radio. He's talking about all this stuff. But maybe it'll help. Maybe. Children sometimes can instigate enlightenment within a family structure. Doesn't just have to happen from the adult side, although that's the more common way, of course. All right, so in looking how to resolve these problems, again, it's back to the basics. It's the things that have so much importance. Remember, children learn what they live, not what you teach them. You can teach all kinds of good things. They can even listen to every show I've said. It doesn't matter if it isn't a life script for the family itself. If the adults are not as an example of it, it doesn't work. The children learn what they live. So make their life something that's spiritual and bring beauty into your family. Make your family beautiful and then go to your next door neighbors, your other relatives, your neighborhood in general, and keep expanding. Keep bringing it out. Go to every level you possibly can and make it larger and larger and larger. Find others who are doing the same. I wouldn't be against finding a party of people who call themselves the beauty folks or something. Whatever will bring about some improvement in everyone's sense of God, of course, but a sense of God's thought in those parts of sense, so that we can really experience together God rather than just our family or friends, but more on a general life scale. All right, so it is possible to try to avert what seems to be almost inevitable at this point. A lot of people are going to say, well, okay, what if I help my kids and I help my neighbor's kids and I help some of my extended family's kids? How is that going to make such a difference? Well, if your kids are doing the same thing, they're going to affect their friends. And over time, this sort of thing, we live in a world today where at least there is communication, even if it's falling apart in some cases, but use it. Use the Internet. I mean, social media, although I'm not an experiencer of it very much and I don't participate, can be used in this way. I have little knowledge of it actually being so at the present time. Most of social media is extremely selfish and has high conflictive value. But there are parts of it that could be changed or improved upon to be more in line with what I'm talking about. I, a few times, have experimented in this area, not in the last few months, but before that, and what I've found is virtually nothing. So that's why I don't bother with it. But maybe any day, you know, it'll change. But in the recent past, I haven't seen it, and in distant past, I didn't try it. So, but as far as I know, it hasn't been there. Now, what would that mean if it is there? Well, social media, if it was a means of beauty and of spiritualizing, we'll say, the people who participate in it, would have large numbers of people talking about being spiritual and in spiritual service. Yeah, well, you try and find them. When you do, let me know about it, because I would like to know if there are any out there. I haven't been able to find it. I'm not great at finding people that way anyway. So I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I just don't know where it is. Okay, so here is the process. It requires, at the present time, a lot more creation than it might 10 years from now, simply because most of what has been created has been unusually selfish. That means there's little light to be found or gained, and therefore almost no beauty in that which is. But that has every bit of chance to be changed. And we need to be looking into this so that we might do something to, we'll say, improve the whole process, getting us into a different frame of mind, if you might call it that. If not, using what we have been using in ways that are wasteful to doing something much more beneficial with them. Remember, if those things are not used in a virtuous way, they are doomed to failure and destruction. So what you think is, oh boy, social media is so great, it's going to be here forever, its days are numbered. Yeah, I know, it sounds impossible, but just remember, I said so when it's gone. And I don't want to get into all the ways it might be gone, but it will go, because that's what's coming. The conflicts involve eventual destruction of that which is leading into darkness. It's the way of God. Eventually it will be destroyed. Even evil destroys once it has sucked all the power it can from something. That which is it created and everybody thought would be around forever, it eventually destroys it. Yeah. Even evil does it. So it's going to happen. All right, so what else might we be looking forward to in a more positive sense so we can live in the coming forth ray and be in a more beautiful world than the ones that we're presently having? Well, here's an interesting thought. And it isn't necessarily just my thought, but it's, I think, the thought of quite a few people. In the area of what we call the arts, you know, I'm talking about all elements of the arts, those areas are peculiarly ugly right now. And I know a lot of people are going to jump up in arms and say, well, do we just put on a classical channel? You can hear great music, or you could go to this event or that event, and there's still this. I'm talking about on an average, and that which is being created today. Remember that things that were done hundreds of years ago, while they may have great beauty from that time and era, usually created by spiritual disciples from that period of time, and maybe even played by people with some degree of sensitivity and helpfulness, if it's music as an example, or some form of repetitive art, it's still nothing more than a copy. To be truly creative, it has to be beautiful in the here and now in its own right. And very little of that has much beauty at the present time, in my opinion. Others may disagree with me. But I'm telling you, from my opinion, we're reaching the bottom of the barrel. And so there's, if you talk about almost any media source, almost, like movies, they're making reruns of reruns of reruns of movies that used to be good movies. And now they make them terrible. And then they make new movies that weren't the reruns of old movies that are even worse. It is crazy stuff. Everything is violent and ugly and struck out. It's a huge mess. And even the uglier movies of such sense from 40 years ago have nothing in comparison to what's being made today. I mean, if anything could be said about what's going on in the question of movie making, television, theater, and that sort of stuff, you could say one word and virtually it encompasses the whole field: zombie. And I think only a zombie can really appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? I've been watching a few minutes here and there of zombies, and they're everywhere. But I think they're everywhere because they're already here with us. It's the people who are producing and the people who are watching. So here's where the point is. If in reality you need to have some kind of violent and destructive stimulation in order to find entertainment, then what you're really doing is trying to repress or deny the lack of love, lack of light in your life by forcing some kind of horribleness that in a way kind of completely overwhelms your senses in a negative way so that you can't notice the true lack of meaning from any light. That's my opinion. I think that's why people love this stuff. But there could be a lot of other reasons. I'm just picking out the one that seems most generally, I think, in common. All right, so the arts are in a kind of flagrant, disgusting form, reaching a terrible, bad state. Can we improve this? We could, if everybody turns the zombies off. Because the arts are dependent upon the stimulation of sense. People refuse to allow their senses to be affected by it by not using it to sense the art. The art goes away. That's a fact. Really, I'm not kidding. As a discipline alone, we can all improve part of the world and bring some beauty into it by simply turning off and not going to anything that has darkness as its main foundation. And that could be most of the things you've presently been doing. Now, I sometimes watch some of these things only to understand them from the more negative issues so I can be aware of what the problems are. But I'm certainly not invested in, I gotta watch another zombie because it's really, the zombies are kicking ass. No, that's not where time, yeah. And if you can avoid that, you may improve some elements of your life. Can you still listen to something that was done hundreds of years ago that's beautiful? Sure, if you choose. Or maybe you can support some folks that are trying to create something that is really beautiful, that are having a very hard time even getting above the noise level, much less the zombie level. So you can do something to make a difference. And if you have the talent and ability, you can directly involve this. Certainly, if you're doing zombie movies or whatever you're doing, you can turn your attention to something better. Here's the bottom line. At the present time, the worst thing that can be done is to continue to create something that is increasing the darkness. So if you are, please stop. If you know others that are, help them to change and become much more enlightening. Try to think of ways of using money, which is compressed time and energy, and talent, and we'll say everything that is so great about humans, to create light in the senses of those who experience what your creations are. Yes, the arts can definitely be improved from where they are right now. In every respect, yes, it's true. Even in the more formidably, we'll say, improved areas, which are few and far between, they aren't all that great, in my opinion. Much improvement is still available. All right. Now, I know, look, I can tell you right now, there's going to be some people that, you know, are going to say, oh, this guy is a radical cuckoo. Okay, that's all right. I don't mind. You could send me an email, say something nasty to me. It's all right. I can take it. I don't mind, really. I don't even mind having a dialogue about it. If you send me an email and say, gee, I want to discuss this with you, I will. All right, how do we then move into something that is so profoundly dark at the present time, like this what I just talked about, and not become depressed, not become like, oh, it's so big, it's so, how are you going to stop this? Again, just don't turn it on. Don't participate. And that's the first place to start, really. And if your kids are into it, or if they're buying the games that are doing all the killings and everything else, say, hey, let's try to find something better. Let's look for the other more positive things. That's going to be difficult. It's not going to be easy. I mean, it used to be, oh, well, we could go to Walt Disney. Not even that is so great anymore. You know? So you're going to need to... And that is what somewhat will say artificial and naturally beautiful. A lot of it was. Not all of it. Some of it generally had some beauty in it. But that's gone by the wayside, too. So you really have to look deep. And there may be little. But you can support and bring about some help and change in that which is. So let's try to do that. You know, there is very little, but you can still try. Does it help to go back in time into the, let's say, the past parts where beauty was there? Sure, it does, only from the standpoint it still improves the senses, but it isn't creative for today, and that's the problem. We can't just rely on history, we have to keep creating anew. And so there will be a necessity to go beyond just the historical parts. Although don't ignore them, and don't think that there isn't something that can be gained from it. Here is the, I guess, best I can say, in terms of making a difference in this. And that is, it's like, in many respects, voting. Everything you do is a vote either for darkness or against it, and look at it from that standpoint. And certainly your financial contribution is a big part of it, but beyond that, even your time, in putting in the time, makes a difference. Really, truly it does. Okay, so can we develop a beauty that is involved with elements of, say, science and medicine, medical science? Yes. And the beauty in that respect is in producing health. Now, interestingly, most people think of health as a natural state, and illness as being the unnatural state. I see it the reverse at the present time. Most people are suffering from an illness we call bad lifestyle. And we live in ways that are so unhealthy that there is no state of health in the majority of people. Some of the examples of this include the following. And that is, there's a propensity for people to be, in many cases, grossly, but at least to some extent, overweight. For most people, to eat things that are very bad for them because of oxidants in the food process, certain types of, we'll say, free radicalized foods, artificiality in the foods. And in my personal opinion, eating generally meat or animals for sustenance is going to, over time, destroy a person's senses. But worse than that is the lifestyle of eating oxidized and free radicalized food, which will do it even faster. And if you do both, you're certainly going to head for unhealthiness in general. On a daily basis, if not prolonged and destructive over time. So what can we say about this? Okay, well, the first thing is to look at your physical body, but this also goes to the astral in an emotional sense and the mental in that sense as well, as your own creation. And if you're going to create enlightenment in it, what you put in it, how you use the body in both sleep and exercise and in creation and meaning in life for the body to become an active participant in the environment around itself in those ways is what leads to health. And that health is not something you can get from the drugstore or even from your medical doctor or from some other kinds of doctors. And health is not something that you can maintain by regular visits to see if you have an illness, because almost everybody I know does. They just don't realize. So here is the issue at hand. People should be living well past 100 years of age and should be living in a way that's much wiser, but you don't even gain wisdom until after age 49, that is a crazy thing because we don't even consider that when we live. You don't gain any significant levels wisdom, unless you live an unusually spiritual life before 49. So it's a difficult thing to realize that most of our life is spent unwisely, and that includes in how we supposedly maintain or literally do not maintain health. The beauty in a body is in not aging by the standards of today's principal way of seeing aging. In other words, if you look like you're your age, then by the standards that everybody else looks at that age, you're unhealthy by a significant level. So there's, it's very hard to discuss this because of the very yardstick that people use, like their own mirror and seeing everybody else around them, is completely an illusion. And the only way you get over that illusion is to change your lifestyle enough to see that, number one, your aging will slow down dramatically, and you can even undo part of it. So you'll go back in time instead of forward. Now, the interesting thing is the process of doing that is a process of creating beauty in the senses from spiritual service and from doing all the things that I've already said, plus a bunch more, so that literally you then become healthy. Now, health is a relative term. That means health is not a quote-unquote diagnosis by a physician. Health is a state of physical, emotional, and mental place in which you are either enlightened to a certain level or darkened by a certain amount. The dark may be a thing called Maya in the etheric physical body. It may be a thing called glamour or fixed desires in the astral body, and it may be a thing called egotism and worse, arrogance in the mental body. When those things start coming together, you are grossly unhealthy, regardless of what you believe otherwise. And I don't care if you can run a 4-minute or 5-minute mile or whatever, it's not going to change the outcome in terms of what health is. Health is the ability to develop an ongoing state of wisdom while you live longer and longer without the signs of aging. Well, that threw you, huh? Yeah, that's my definition of health. I told you it was going to be a little strange, right? Okay, that's my definition. Now, do you have that state of health? Is that what you're doing each day of your life? If it is, hey, you got it. You already know what I'm saying to be true, and you're one of the people who needs to help others to become healthy. But you can't get it by eating a certain breakfast cereal or going to a certain gym or going to get a health checkup by a doctor, supposedly. So you see, the issues here are complex, but at the same time, in strange ways, simple. Yeah, I mean, I defined health in a way that for most people, you could literally quantify it, but most people would prefer to ignore it because they aren't even coming close to creating health for themselves. Health is a state internally created by creating beauty in the body where the health is. And we have at least 3 bodies that we need to create health in as a human being. All right, so this is a fascinating subject. Again, I want to recommend that you try to bring the awareness of what I just said into your family, and particularly children. Children have almost no sense of this because they don't understand the concept of aging and wisdom due to the fact that their parents seldom live a wise aging life. When the parents do, children become totally different because their understanding of their own growth and aging process turns on itself. They don't any longer see themselves growing up so that it can become more, autonomous. they see themselves growing up so they can become more soul, we'll say infused, and more creative and co-creative with God. That's a whole different way of growing up. And from that, they then understand what wisdom is. Because they see it in others and appreciate it such, they seek it out. First in their parents, because it takes wise parents to develop children who will recognize it. And then in themselves as co-creators, so that they become amazingly more healthy. And they grow older at a much slower pace than what is the accepted norm of today. This is such a different worldview that it's a little hard to talk about it, because I don't know how many of those who are listening get it. It's going to be a few and far between that can fully identify with what I'm talking about, because they haven't yet done it. And for most people, until they actually experience this, they doubt its validity. It's because it's so prolific in not being done. Wisdom is so lacking in life, and aging is so prominent in terms of the commonality of experience in the physical world, because it's so rapid, that most people accept it as what is real. This is what I'm fighting against, so to speak, in tonight's show. Because in order to become beautified, we must become healthy. Otherwise, our senses are not at the point where they even come close to being beautiful. And the senses of those that we are trying to serve and help and co-serve with are even in a worse state. And this is where the problem lies, is that there's just no yardstick. There's so few people that are even examples that, for most people, it's like they have no reference. Now, I have a reference, but that's a different issue. The point that is needed here most is for people to experiment in themselves to prove what I'm saying. And that requires a lot of discipline, mostly spiritual discipline, but in some cases some mundane as well. You've got to use a bit of both. And as one does, then little bits, piece by piece, the truth comes, enlightenment comes, the body improves, and health becomes part of life. Now, some people have karma from prior lifetimes, and they have to overcome that. Some people inherit karma because of strangeness and what they're here to do, etc. That's part of it. You're going to still have to do what you can and be very creative to find health if that's the case. I mean, if you're born with all kinds of genes that are screwed up, you're going to have to work that out for yourself and for in ways that may not be traditionally found anywhere. People with those kinds of issues are here to create solutions not just for themselves, but obviously for many others. It is an opportunity for those to overcome those things for the sake of others. When they do, they cure themselves, but they also bring health to many others at the same time. That's the reason certain spiritually endowed people sometimes have to overcome certain health issues. There are also health issues for those who at spiritual times I have the disease of what is called the spiritual disciple. What is that? It usually comes from spiritual ambition. In other words, gee, I want to be better because then I'll look better and I'll be a real important person. Well, the self-importance issue causes the disease that they bring onto themselves. And some of those diseases are pretty serious diseases, believe me. And so that also is a big deal. You can read about those, again, in some of the Bailey books. It's pretty interesting that most of this stuff has been explained a long time ago. You can also read about it in some of the Theosophical books. outside of Bailey's works. And you can find most of this actually being talked about a long, long time ago. I mean, like thousands of years ago. So don't think, well, it's just this guy on the radio and he's a nut. Well, there are a lot of, must have been a lot of other nuts from a long, long time ago that talked about the same stuff. Maybe not from exactly the same perspective that I speak today, but pretty darn close. Okay, so if we are trying to beautify our bodies to be healthy and wise, because the two go hand in hand, then the next step in the process would be to bring this to the awareness of the general, we'll say, world. Now, how can we do that? Well, of course, letting everybody know about what you're doing, if it's successful, is helpful. But beyond that, it also means that you have to be willing to put yourself out there. Let people know, and they might think you're a kook or crazy or whatever, but it's okay. As a matter of fact, it may even be the hallmark of a person who is spiritual to be willing to be tarnished in reputation, to look like a goofy nut, and to say things that most people disagree with, because if somebody doesn't do that, I'm pretty sure that things are not going to change. So it requires a number of people willing to put themselves within that position. And in health, that's particularly true, because I'm going to tell you right now that the egotism in healthcare is not going down by any stretch. If you live in the United States, Obamacare is the epitome of arrogance and the epitome of a few trying to control one of the most intimate and important elements of creating beauty. And when you try to control the creation of beauty in others, it's evil. Be aware of that. It's a form of evil. So you're going to see a lot more of it coming. I realize that it won't manifest fully until 2014, but regardless, it's certainly coming in the next year. And when it does, those who stand and up and say, this is evil, it's wrong, it is against God, and it's against wisdom and health to do these things, to remove the choices and to have 15 people who have no understanding of health deciding what's right and wrong for the benefit of the government, which is upside down from our Constitution in the United States anyway, that is where the real darkness lies. 17% of the economy, and it's almost 100% of control of the very basics of life itself for human beings. So be aware that that's coming, and you can be on one side or the other, but you can't be buried with your head in the sand, because there will be consequences for those who do that. There'll be consequences for those who speak out and fight it as well, but they will be consequences only on a, we'll say, superficial side. Those who don't will have consequences on a deeper and more formidable issue in terms of the meaning in their life, the health they have or lose, and the process, we'll say, of how they will, over time, lose who they are as a soul. This is really an attack, not so much on the personhood of people, but on the nature of being a soul. Now, it sounds like a big, big statement, but it is what it is. When you get down to the very nature of your choices of food and who you choose to consult, if you consult with anybody, on health care, and whether or not you want a certain health care, or you'll be penalized to the point where you can't almost eat, because you won't make enough money, and you may get fired, or you may be put out of business, or you may be put in a position where maybe you go to jail. All of these things require unusual fortitude and great wisdom. Because I don't want to see people go into jail. I don't want to see people being harmed. Wise people find ways around even the worst of darkness and evil. They still can outsmart it. And they can do so usually by serving others and helping others to do even more so themselves. Remember, you can't do this all alone because the system is too big. So it needs a number of others to be getting together with about it. And I prepare now, because a year from now, if you're not prepared, it'll be too late. Okay. The fourth rate, as it applies to health, means more what many people call alternative health. It is not the allopathic medical science approach that people consider to be healthcare in the Western world. Now, when you use the fourth ray from the standpoint I'm talking about, it's almost entirely outside of nationalized health, and especially Obamacare. So be aware of the fact that the fourth ray is directly in conflict with the present healthcare law. And it is in conflict in so many different ways as to mean that some people are going to need assistance to even stay in practice. I'm working with some people that need assistance in this. And also be aware that it is a problem in general for all of us, because the fourth ray has been helping the fifth ray of scientific medicine, which we call allopathic medicine, to realize its failings and its egotisms and, worse yet, the arrogance of some practicing physicians in that area and other allied health, quote-unquote, professionals. So this is a big deal because, unfortunately, specifically for healthcare, the fourth ray is a critical ingredient to saving what I call real health. Real health care. How are we going to deal with this? Well, it's going to be a conflict that only can be resolved by people sacrificing a good deal of money, time, and energy to support what will remain of alternative health. Now, the system as it's designed is to go after and to force those people either out of practice or to switch to being under the thumb of the government. And once that happens, those people will no longer be practicing in the fourth way. And all of the beauty they could have produced, which would have produced real health, will be gone. So to preserve them, we need, the rest of us need, to try to find ways of keeping those people still in practice and expand it and become integrated more and more before the government prevents it, which will be only about a year from now, from becoming extinguished. So there's a lot of fighting to go on in this respect, but the fighting needs to be wise, not just kind of screaming and yelling fighting. It needs to come fight with your money and fight with your resounding, spending your time, energy, and health examinations, etc., with people that are truly functioning more forthright, which is alternative health. Alternative health includes all the things you might recognize as acupressure, acupuncture, infusions of various parts that usually include chelation, a huge number of aromatherapy, music therapy, a change, we'll say, from looking at the body as outside and different from the mind, saying that the two is something different from awareness and all kinds of stuff. And then it also means that natural medicines include herbs and many other things, nutraceuticals, that are not part of the prescriptive method of moving energy through force, but rather by moving energy through light. Now, a whole different concepts are involved in this. And this needs to be thoroughly developed. The science of 5-Qi is what I just said it was, what I just described. And this has yet to even gotten into the, you know, consciousness of even alternative health at this point. You know, I've been teaching about it for many years on the radio. It hasn't really reached any fulmination point where people are saying, well, what is it all about? Can you teach it to us? You know, it's very difficult because even among those who are in alternative health, they're still pretty closed-minded. So we need open-mindedness. We need wisdom. Wisdom always requires open-mindedness. And so we're battling that too, in a sense. It's not just science guys. It's everybody has a tendency to be closed-minded within their own quote-unquote system. Chiropractic, myopractic practice, and many other sources of body manipulation, part of it. Massage, very critical part. You know, Reiki therapies. Just on and on. There's so many things that need to be integrated together so that it is possible to open the mind rather than close it. It is necessary also to remove the almost terror of the Federal Drug Administration, which, Federal Food and Drug Administration, which presently is acting as the henchman of the drug companies and now the Obama administration. So it is a means to an end to destroy health. And for many of people, they think it's a good thing. Well, they protect our food and our drugs. Well, they do. They protect the food they want to protect and the drugs, certainly. But they don't protect health. They destroy health. So there's a whole different issue here. Could they be protective of food and drugs without destroying health? Yes. Yes, but then they would be advising and they wouldn't be really going out and, putting people in jail and throwing away the key and that kind of stuff. I mean, the main thing here is freedom. Anything that destroys freedom destroys God. God is first in principle freedom. Now, freedom isn't the freedom to destroy others either. The freedom is the right of choice. And if choice is removed from you, it's anti-God. And right now, choice is being removed by almost on a daily basis by every executive order and every other thing, rule and regulation that is being promoted by a government gone crazy here in the United States. Elsewhere as well. But it's already happened in other places, as bad or worse. And as far as nutraceuticals and herbs, that's a great danger. Because of a thing called Codex and the general attitude of the present administration about those things, which is they want to control everything. So here is a need, you can say, that everybody do what they can if they're going to maintain their health to keep freedom and choice alive in every aspect of life. Because one of the first places it's going to get you if you don't is in how you age more quickly and how long you have to live here in the physical world, which will be greatly shortened. Freedom when it is curtailed, almost always curtails life expectancy and quality of health. It also curtails meaning in life. And in some cases, that's the more suffering of the events. Quite frankly, I'd rather die early if there's no meaning in my life than to live longer with a meaningless existence. You can see what I'm getting at there. Okay, so if we're going to create the beauty that's necessary, we need to be examining how free we are. Freedom is a tough one because the dark side seeks most to use the first way to destroy freedom rather than to gain it, obviously. And it is extremely good at doing it. Better than anything else, it has learned the easiest way to destroy God is through destroying freedom. So it's attempting to do that. And it can't destroy God, of course, but the point is that it wants to. And it will do all it can to do so, unless we do something such as create more beauty in our world. And that will counter it. Okay, let's talk about freedom of choice in some other ways that I think are important. We need to examine how to create more freedom of choice in terms of ability for people to, we'll say, have the right and ability to earn a living. Today, you may know that Hostess, which is, you know, they make a lot of sugar stuff, obviously, but they're out of business. At least they said they're going out of business. And why are they going out of business? Because one of the unions, an important part of their business, which they got involved with because they bought up so many other companies in states where they didn't originally function from, had closed unions. That means that you had to be a member of the union to be a member of their business. And they inherited that by buying into the companies and becoming part of the Hostess system. This ended up destroying their company. If they were had been wise, they would have only bought in places companies that were free and didn't have closed unions. They could have unions, but people could freely join the company without having to be a member. And then they wouldn't be in the pickle they were in. And they wouldn't have gone bankrupt in 2004 and be going out of business in 2012. But they are because they weren't wise, because they didn't understand the spiritual principles that I teach. So what does that mean? Well, go to the states in the United States that promote freedom by having openized unions where it is they call it freedom to work state, and don't go and don't do business in states that don't. That's not going to stop the problem, but it will slow it down. If you're in a country where this is happening, go to a different country, and if you can't. And if you can't, then find some alternatives for how you can not be controlled by a system in which freedom is destroyed. That's one example. There are zillions of them. But on a big scale, it's a pretty important one. And in most cases, people have a choice to be either imprisoned or not. Usually they have to sacrifice where they live and what their standard of living might be, and in some other cases, other comforts or other issues, friends, family, etc., that are so important to them. But if you truly believe that freedom is the most important, you will sacrifice those other things for the sake of freedom, because you will realize that it isn't an individual choice to be free. When one person chooses freedom, it affects all others. And when one person chooses being bound and being imprisoned by the society that they're in, the results are disastrous for all others. Then you go from beauty to ugliness, and from a harmonious situation to a great deal of conflict. We live in a world of choice all the time. And every day we're making these choices. I know all the excuses. Well, I can't leave because I have family. I can't leave because I have friends. I can't leave because I have this and that house and this and that business and this and that money and this and that. Well, fine. Then live in imprisonment and see where that leads you. Into a meaningless existence of unwise life, unhealthy life, a life of shortness, suffering, discomfort, and pain. Now, that's what you're asking for. And a life infiltrated in every respect by corruption, evil, darkness, forces everywhere. That's to me no life at all. Talk about a worthless existence. Why be here? Where does that get you? Where does it get us as souls who come here to bring God into the world? It's a waste of time to me. And time is so short in the physical world. It's short because we can't tolerate much more because our bodies are destroyed so quickly and our senses. But it's also short because literally the forces become impenetrable, become unbearable. I think people just wear out, not just from the physical side, but from their own will. They can just run out of will. They can't create anymore because they can't make enough consistent choices to be creative. That's a lack of will. We sometimes call it willpower. You know. It's the same thing. You just, you know, you go through 65, 75 years and say, oh, I'm ready. Yeah, retire, quit. Can't do it anymore. Yeah, well, if you do have that, and many people do have that sense of life, well, you might be right. Maybe it's time to say it's time to move on. But the point is you can still change anytime. And with some of the suggestions in tonight's show, you can make it a lot better. Remember, we're talking about living in the coming fourth ray, not dying. I'm coming up with some ideas here that might be of some help even to somebody who is past the point where they think it's over for them. You know, it's not over till the fat lady sings, and the fat lady usually sings because she's fat and because she's lived her life in an unhealthy way and has no more willpower and can no longer make the choices necessary because every sense in her has been destroyed to the point where a senseless existence can never be a wise one. Unless a godly or spiritual one. Okay, so what are the final things that I would like to bring up tonight? I'm running out of time, as I usually do, in talking about these things. Well, let's talk about love here. You know, we don't do justice to love in most circumstances because for human beings to be loving, it goes way beyond the romantic values of love that are so pronounced within the social circles, media, creations, which includes, you know, stories and music and theatrics, etc. It is incumbent that love means the following. We need to be looking at giving as the promotion of others to be giving. Our giving should be the answer for others to find ways of being more giving, which includes beauty. When we do this, it makes others automatically more beautiful because our service to them is that. We have a direct connection through the love of them as souls to help their senses to improve because it is so joyful to us. It eventually produces a state of bliss to us, but most importantly, regardless of those things, we do it because we love God and we can see God within them no matter how much they have not so exercised their life up to that point. That's where the love is that I'm talking about and what is missing in many people. If we can love like that, then we will make a huge difference. Now, what does it mean if you're, let's say you have a spouse, and you say, well, I love my spouse. But do you love your spouse in the way I just said? If you don't, that's a good place to start. Not because it is your spouse, but because you don't even know who your spouse really is if you don't love them that way. So it would be good to get to know them, maybe for the first time, even if you've been married for a long time, or if you haven't aren't married, even if you've been close to them in whatever way. The point is that this is a new and unique experience. It gets into sexuality, too, which I won't have time to go into tonight, but it follows all of the ways of tantric sexual aspects, and it allows you to experience them in a way of being them during sexual experiences. But the most important part of it is it gives you a totally new sense of reality and God to be close enough to a person to love them so that they will have beauty in their senses, maybe even greater than your own. As a matter of fact, if your motive is to exceed that which you might get out of it, or you are already, that's the most wonderful kind of love you can have for your spouse, children, anyone. I'm using spouses because, believe it or not, I think that's where marriages are falling apart so often, and that's what's destroying families. And we, in earlier shows, saw how important families are. So it's real critical that this part change, because if it does, the whole foundations in society change. It's not some romantic gesture that I'm suggesting here. It's something way beyond that. Way beyond that. And when you do it, you can see the beauty. The challenge here and the way to know that you're doing it right is you will see the beauty in your spouse at a level that is beyond your own in awareness. That doesn't mean they are more beautiful than you. You're just more aware of it than you are in yourself. Then you got the right thing. Then you know you really love them. Yep, I'm serious. Try it and see if I'm right. I mean, seriously, try. You know, you say, well, this guy's crazy. No, just try it. If I'm wrong, I mean, it will be clear as day. I must be wrong, right? But if you do it, and if you can achieve it, I mean, it's not so hard, not so easy to do, but if you do it, you will be able to determine for yourself whether I'm right or wrong, right? This is true of all the things I suggest. There are simple enough ways to challenge the validity of what I'm saying. In your own mind and heart and your actions, you can figure it out for yourself. All right, so here's another thing that you might want to consider. If your spouse is a person who has at least similar values to you, when you start doing this, you will encourage the same in reverse from them. And so you get into this back and forth thing that has within it a almost, we'll say, engine of further creation of enlightenment in each of the two of you. This is only possible, in my opinion, to be done in a monogamous fashion. I don't believe in polygamous relationships between people who are in a sexual relationship, because sex requires that you become one with the other person's senses, and no two people have the same senses. So if you are becoming one with one other person, if you add a third, fourth, fifth, or whatever people involved, you are splitting and separating your sense, not becoming one in the same with each, but trying to become one with each one, and therefore achieving neither. So really, monogamy is the answer if you're going to achieve this kind of oneness that I'm referring to. Winner is a sexual issue. It has to do with the way sexual energy moves back and forth. I don't have time to explain it right now, but look in Chapter 7 of Life's in Meaning. It's explained there with pictures and stuff, and some people buy it, and some other people say, oh, it's got nuts. But if you think about it, I think you'll see it makes sense, and if you experiment with it, I think you'll really say it makes sense. So here's the bottom line. Here we have, Del, a formula, if you want to call it that, for improvement between two people. And the two people can work on this together, and then they can incorporate elements so they can teach others about it as well. They can't include them into a relationship with it because of the monogamy principle, but they can at least let others know that this is working for them, and the others can try the same thing. So being a proponent of this is a good thing because it advocates beauty in the senses of others, and that's what we are looking for in living in the coming fourth ray, which is right here now. It's not that strong, and it will become much stronger in the next 12 to 13 years. But still, we have to look at this from the standpoint that every day counts. Don't wait for 2020 and say, well, that's when I'll really get involved. That's when he says things are going to get better. No, you got to make it better. Don't think, well, gee, I'll wait it out. No, if you wait it out, the karma says bad news for you, and bad news for the whole world, for that matter, if everybody waits it out. You understand, we are each an example for everybody else of this thing of beauty. If we're going to create it, we each have to be involved in it as much as we can. Please don't assume that you don't matter. If you're listening tonight, you certainly matter, because most people aren't. And most people have no clue about what I'm talking about, right? So at least you got some chance, right? And you can re-listen to the show and have others listen to it, too. You know, it's always available. And by the way, I apologize for last week. The quality of the show sound was very bad. We had some equipment problems. They're better tonight, so hopefully you're able to hear me more clearly. Well, we are running out of time, and I hope tonight's show has really meant something in understanding what's coming. And living in the new world, so to speak, is going to be more demanding. It's going to require a lot more in wisdom and health and other things to understand what's coming. But it could be a great challenge. For those who want to be involved and make a difference, this is a good time. Opportunity will present itself. It already has, and you can make a difference. Age has nothing to do with it. I don't care if you're 100 years old. I don't care if you're 12 years old. You've got the opportunity, and the time is now. We're not here by accident. We're here by design. Our soul has chosen this time because this is the best time for us to be here to make a difference. And we're doing so because we're here as a team. All the other souls that are here with us are here to try to work together. But we have to, as individuals, make that decision as well. Let's try to do that, and hopefully we will be. Well, I hope this show has made a difference. I hope it has done the sort of thing that I so much would like it to do. And, again, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.